Welcome to another episode of After the Film, where we tell you if that film that just came out this weekend is worth the price of admission. This week, we're talking about the latest film in the ever-expanding Marvel catalog, and that is Thor, Love, and Thunder. This is the Taika Waititi vehicle, both directed by Taika Waititi and written by Taika Waititi, and featuring the cast of characters that you know and love from the Thor franchise. And joining us today is a whole host of special guests. We have both Andrew and Lauren from the Pop Culture Roundtable, and we also have Heather Pink from the Unpopular Disney Opinions podcast. This episode is full of spoilers, so do not listen unless you've A, seen the film, or B, want to get it absolutely spoiled for you. And with that said, let's jump into the conversation. All right, let's start the way we start every time, which is with a quick synopsis of the film. And what I like to do is I like to never be the one that gives it, because then how can you be wrong? And what I normally do, I normally defer to our guest. But in this case, I have three guests, so I guess I could pick any one of you. But Heather, would you like to take
I was really hoping you're going to pick Andrew. I really was.
Okay, Andrew. Andrew,
I mean, I've literally seen it in the last half hour.
It's so really funny because I usually prep a like summary because I don't like to be put on the spot, and I forgot to do it this time.
So really okay, so Andrew, you're the only one prepared for this.
Yeah.
Can you give us just a couple of sentences, very, very high-level overview of what this movie is about before we jump into the really...
Yeah, so
I was going to say I didn't want to say the word meaty. I stopped into the really like heavy conversation.
Yeah, that's probably good. Just stay away from words about meat. The general synopsis is this picks up a little bit after Endgame, where Thor and the Asgardians of the galaxy are out and about, and it's Thor kind of getting his groove back, as it were, and then some stuff happens with a bad guy, and we see an origin story begin there, and he is out to kill all of the gods, and Thor needs to stop him, and he has some help from some friends, some that you know and some that are brand new, and then a lot of hilarity ensues. And that's it.
I love how well that actually fits in this case. It also felt like you just read that straight off like Rotten Tomatoes. That is very, very high level, but let's be clear. Again,
I also felt like you were avoiding spoilers, even though we're allowed to spoil
it. I know, I thought we talked about it.
But here's the thing. But my point was, we're giving them one final chance to get out of here before we start dropping stuff. That was what I was trying to do.
So here we are, full spoilers, gloves are off, we can talk about anything. Now, there's kind of two big parts of this conversation. Normally, we would jump in and kind of break apart like character arcs, you know, cinematography, music, etc. But we really have to talk about the elephant in the room, which is the comparisons, well, the hate. but a lot of the direct comparisons that are being drawn between this and Ragnarok. And I think it's really important we kind of compare and contrast those. However, that said, I actually want to save that piece of the conversation for after we talk about more of the themes and characters specifically in this film. So let's just softball it. I think it's nice to have a easy intro. So Andrew,
yeah,
let's just start with you, and then we're going to go in a nice little the conversation is going to go where it goes. But given your designiness, how do you feel about this film in terms of the Thor series? How do you feel about this film and the use of color, just the look of everything going on, especially that incredible tiny planet?
Yeah. So I think this movie, I thought Thor Ragnarok was the best looking Marvel movie to date. And then we've seen some really nice stuff happen with whatever his name is, Spider-Man. Spider-Man.
Don't say Doctor Strange.
But I did like some of the stuff in Doctor Strange, like visually some of the stuff they did. Mm-hmm. But this took what we loved about Ragnarok and amped it up even more. The colors were stunning. The visuals were stunning. The contrast of black and white noir, where you see these hints of color coming through.
Oh, that was great.
When they were using their powers and their weapons kind of emulated or like emanated this color. I thought that was beautiful. This film was absolutely gorgeous to watch. Like from beginning to end, there wasn't a bad shot in this movie.
You know,
I think all that Shadow Realm stuff stood out so much more too, because like the rest of the movie is such a rainbow of color, and like maybe more than any other MCU anything, including Ragnarok. Like it was the only thing that could compete, maybe.
Yeah.
But like I loved like that. Then you go from like this crazy smorgasbord of color to nothing almost, you know. And then those hints with the lights were so cool. Definitely reminded me of like Kenobi with the lightsaber battle. How like how much lighting affected like the storytelling and stuff. Just brilliant.
You know, I actually, I did go back and watch Ragnarok. That film is not as vibrant as I remember it being.
Yeah, I actually agree. I was rewatching, like I said to you guys before this, the first 50 minutes of it. And I remember, and as I was rewatching it back, I was like, wow, this, like, Thor Love and Thunder is a more aesthetically pleasing movie than number 3 was. Like, 3 had some of these funnier, really funny punchlines, where 4 felt sometimes forced, sometimes funny, relied on some of the chemistry. But in my opinion, it was more aesthetically pleasing than 3 was.
Yeah, and I don't think I would have had... I didn't remember it that way. Like, had I not gone back and watched it, I might have tried to lump them together. But it's... the exception is, of course, the time that's spent with Jeff Goldblum, the whatever his name is, the master architect, or Grandmaster. I literally just watched this a couple hours ago and I don't even remember the guy's name. That's okay.
Grandmaster.
Thank you. Yes, perfect. Yes. Great.
Do you think you think we're remembering Ragnarok as a brighter film because of the print that I have from Matt Taylor?
Okay. That's what I think.
Yeah.
I think it's that 100%.
I think too, like the Marvel movies used to just be like a darker palette until Guardians of the Galaxy. And they've gotten a little bit more and more, but like Thor's 3 and 4 definitely stand out as maybe the most like big and bold use of color, other than maybe Ms. Marvel.
I was just going to say that outside of Ms. Marvel, because I think that show is gorgeous. I mean, I actually just love watching the beginning and end credits, just how they show.
Yes.
And even just having to have the simple enjoyment of that, or the intro scene to the entire series, like they've really stepped it up in a totally different way. So,
yeah.
You went to say gorgeous and you cut it off at gore. And I think that's perfect given the conversation we're talking about right now.
Yes.
The other thing that I will say is a standout, and again, the tiny planet, just that whole scene that happens, you know, kind of in the absence of color, is awesome. But the other thing I'll say that really stands out is that in the fight of the Valkyries that you see in Ragnarok, and I did not remember this, that is from a visual standpoint incredibly similar to the tiny planet fight that happens in Love and Thunder, to the point that the one in Love and Thunder almost feels like a rehash instead of something that's like wholly new. So that was just something that on a rewatch stood out to me, because I did not remember that. But then seeing them so close together, it's a very similar beat within the film.
I want to say that I don't know that it's a fair comparison. Me and my best friend walked out of the theater and he was like, I really liked 4, but I like 3 better. And no surprise here, probably, Andrew, is I liked 4 better than I liked 3. I thought that 3 seemed a little predictable outside of Valkyrie. She was kind of the wild card. If you know comic books, you know probably what's going to happen to Natalie Portman, right, in this. But I felt like everything outside of Natalie Portman, I felt was a bit unpredictable. And I just remember, I don't really know where I was originally going with this one, but I definitely know that for me, I liked 4 better than 3.
I think I'm gonna have to
rewatch before I can like be objective about that decision, because I've seen 3 like way more times, and it's just like not fair to be like, oh, this movie you saw one time.
No, and I can't wait to watch it again.
No, to me, like, so like, but I would definitely say I like 3 more than 4, but I'm gonna totally cop to the fact that it's like a party movie. It's very simple by comparison. They did not even try to like ask questions that are half as thoughtful. So like they're two different movies. And I think it's also like it's like Guardians 1 and 2. Like there was the big surprise of like, this is so different and this music and this look is awesome. And then like, we can't re-surprise you when you get the sequel.
You know,
I have differing opinions about all of this stuff.
No worries.
Especially after seeing it twice.
what I was going to say. Yeah. The only thing I think is the big difference is you have like Natalie Portman in four, but in three, you have Jeff Goldblum, you have Mark Ruffalo, you have Doctor Strange. Like, you've got big heavy hitters behind number three that, like, truthful, you, yeah, sure. Like, are you really going to hang your hat on Zeus? Like, in my opinion, they don't compare. You know, you get Natalie Portman. I don't
think, yeah.
But, like, it's tough. It's tough to compare when there's, like, it's very unbalanced.
Yeah, and I think, like, Gorg... Oh, sorry. We'll let Andrew talk about his...
Yeah, because we're about to switch to the individual characters. Andrew, what were you wanting to say in response to that?
I'm not going to dive into all of this stuff because it has to do with a lot of themes. Seeing it a second time, this film is a lot deeper than I thought it was at first blush. At first blush, everyone keeps referring to how silly it is and how it's like straight comedy when it doesn't need to be and all these things. The movie has so much more heart the second time you go in. There is a lot of depth. So, Lauren, when you said the thing about it not asking the like that, it's just way simpler. I don't agree with that sentiment. And then I'd say
three is simpler than four.
Oh, okay. Then yes, I do agree with you. Okay.
Yeah, I was saying three is the party movie. It's the fun time. You're gonna watch him smash stuff and meet his friends. Okay. Girlfriend dying. It's much sadder.
And then Heather, I did wanna ask a question that's maybe just steering a little bit. You may have enjoyed this film more because you got to go to the world premiere with all of the stars. That may have had some sort of impact on how you liked the film. Right?
I may have accidentally ran into Chris Pratt moments before this movie started. And I say so cool. That was all 100% true. I told Andrew that I would save him the story for the podcast. Yes, I do. I'm very lucky. You know, living in LA, you do get connected to a lot of people. A friend of mine, I've been waiting to ask her this ask, because she works a lot of the red carpets, and I was like, I'm gonna wait till the one. I'm a huge Guardians fan, love Star-Lord. He is my favorite character of all the Marvel characters. So we went. Me and my best friend went. We got into the theater. They put your phone into a locked case, and then we thought the movie was gonna start at 7. It didn't. So right before the movie actually did start, I ran to the bathroom and ran outside to use my phone. And these events, they shuttle you. Like, you're not really standing by yours. You know, you're not standing still, but they let me because I was on my phone. And Chris Pratt happened to just, I looked up and he was standing there and he did one of those things where he waved. And I like, oh, me. Yeah, cool. I was standing by myself right outside the Chinese theater on my phone. And I said, hey, can I get a picture? He's like, yeah. So, we take the picture and I said, Star-Lord's my favorite. And I was actually wearing this shirt too. I was like, I know it doesn't seem like it right now, but Star-Lord is my favorite. Yeah.
You were at the Thor party, so I feel like it's only fair to wear this shirt.
Right? It was, you know, I will say that even though I was at the premiere and I'm coming off of that like moment of being buzzy and, you know, like I think I'm also one of the most critical people of these movies as well. Like, I love the unpredictability factor. Like, no matter what, I want to be wowed. I want to be, you know, I was very lucky to not have any spoiler anything, being one of the first people to see the movie. It did make me like it a little bit more. Yes, but I liked how serious it was. I liked the balance of the serious, the funny. I thought the action scenes were amazing, like truly amazing in this one. I think Thor, like, they could make 10 Thors and I would be cool with it, honestly. Yeah.
So then let's continue that thought, and specifically about the inclusion of the Guardians. So Jedi in our chat is saying that he understood Guardians of the Galaxy being featured in this film was going to be short, but it didn't necessarily feel like it was in the spirit of those characters. And of course, they then disappeared very quickly. Whereas, like you mentioned, Jeff Goldblum's inclusion in the third Thor earlier, and even though he's not necessarily in the film for a very long time, it still feels very natural, like how he's woven into that, even if he doesn't necessarily have a ton of screen time. And I'm sorry, not Jeff Goldblum. I said Jeff Goldblum, but that's not what I'm thinking. The Hulk, Banner.
Ruffalo.
That said, how did you feel about Guardians in this film? And then, of course, that being the first major action sequence in the film.
You know what's funny is my best friend and I said, watch the Guardians be in this movie for less than 10 minutes. And he was like, oh, for sure.
I knew that. Yeah.
So we did a bet, and our bet was that it was going to be between 6.5 and 7.5 minutes. And I was annoying, and I totally did it on my watch. I actually watched a bunch of press from this movie, specifically Karen Gillian, and like just hearing how she or they talk about it, it was definitely different. It was definitely outside their comfort zone. And I think that you saw it a little bit. It was just a different side of the Guardians that is not James Gunn. It's Taika, who's crazy. Did I like it? Yeah, of course. Did I think that they didn't talk as much? Yeah, I don't, you know, I don't think it was as Guardian as it could have been.
I also kind of felt like, though, they were trying to make a point of, like, Thor isn't actually, like, a good match with them as much as it's, like, fun to have them hang out. Like, he's stealing the thunder, literally, from their party. And, like, they don't have anything to do. They're just like, this guy. And they just kind of want to get rid of him. And it's kind of, like, the vibe that I got from that. I mean, I maybe am, like, going to be the Guardians apologist. Like, I could have watched a whole movie of them together and been happy. But, like, that wasn't what they were going to do. That has nothing to do with what they wanted to get to in this movie. Yeah. So it did feel like something they just needed to move on from very, very, very quickly. And it's okay.
And Kreider's bringing this up in the chat, but my understanding too is that James Gunn helped co-direct the scenes with the Guardian. So it's still, they are still all under James Gunn's proverbial wing, right? Like under his umbrella. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it was, if that is true, which is my understanding, then I think it was a great cooperative, collaboration between them. It made sense for Taika to not try to do with the Guardians what he would do with the Guardians, allowing, but asking him to come in and
I give you your shift as a
and exactly. Yeah. And oversee, you know, oversee this crew, like, that's super smart of him. Let Taika do what he does. And he did it. He Taika Waititi'd himself out in this movie. So let James Gunn be James Gunn for his people and then let Taika do his thing. And I think that's a smart way of approaching it.
It's actually shocking how little of Taika you kind of feel when you go back and watch Ragnarok, by the way. Lauren, continuing that, I'm curious who your standout characters
I think so, especially because it was like new and like we haven't talked about it yet. Gore was awesome. Like I always think the villains are, this was a particularly good villain. I think it was interesting to kind of just like, it's also like great. I think that they didn't even like need to fight him in the end. Like he overpowered them and it was like crazy, but they just like talked to him and like worked out a solution. So like, I think that was cool. Christian Bale is just like eating this, like every scene that he's in, just like chewing it up with those creepy teeth. And like, I thought like it was just fun, I think, to like watch him be in a superhero movie again, not acting anything like he usually does. Like, I feel like he was having a good time doing this movie. And like, I was enjoying like his performance. I think it's a good villain. I like the look. I think it was really creepy. And like how he is like just, you know, white and colorless, like in this ultra colorful, you know, universe and everything. And like, just very compelling. And I loved, we can get into this later, but I think like how things all worked out in the ending was like extremely touching and awesome. So like really cool.
He was a truly menacing villain. Like the way really they scary, shot him, actually. The way they edited him, there were scenes where he looked like a skeleton head. Like the way they shot it, like where it didn't look like he had a jaw, scenes where it didn't look like he even had a nose. Like it looked like not truly human menacing. Almost.
Yeah.
It was.
And I maybe like Taika was sort of inspired by like The Machinist. I was just talking about that movie with a friend where like Christian Bale does some creepy things with just himself, like his body, that are so unnatural and weird. And it's just him standing around. It's nothing. It's not it actually.
He just has a creepy body.
He's creepy. So I think that he channeled like a lot of things that are like I've seen from him in other things really well. And like even charming sometimes, like when he's talking to the kids, what a fun scene that is, you know?
Yeah.
I couldn't decide if he was trying to be gentle or not. I think it almost felt like I was split between if he was trying to be intimidating or trying to be loving. And it almost felt like he was trying to be loving to a degree, like in that moment. But I like how I couldn't tell. I appreciate how screwy that bit was. The I loved the character. Yeah, his movement, the way things come out of the shadow, the way he's able to disappear and reappear, all that stuff is a wild to watch and a very cool. The part of the film that I think I struggle with the most actually has to deal around the introduction of his character. I knew his story from the comics. Like I knew where he came from. I understood what was about to happen. But it was all so abrupt partly because it takes place within just a few minutes. And so I think it's hard to get the level of, I don't know that betrayal is the word, but the level of,
betrayal is a good word. Yeah.
Nothing that it amounted to after giving like your life and all of your family's lives and all of your friends' lives. Like maybe it's not really possible to communicate that, especially in that amount of time.
I think they could have if they had made it a 2-hour, 15-minute movie. But I think they made the choice to abbreviate that so they could put his relatability on the back end. And I agree with that choice.
Yeah. So, but my issue is that I didn't feel the weight of how badly he was treated in that moment. And then moving forward from that moment, he's just possessed. So yes. Is he actually a man that's still doing this out of deep grief vengeance. or vengeance or whatever? Or now is he just completely out of control and so we're not actually feeling the outcome of that moment because we're just feeling the outcome of a possession? So all of that to say, I think I had an empathetic disconnect in that regard. I mean, I have a certain level of understanding around the idea of, you know, a child and death of a child and all that kind of stuff. But there was still a disconnect between that moment. So even though I loved him as a villain, that's the part that I felt the weakest coming out of the film.
I mean, for me, Oh, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, I think that's like a fair thing to say. This movie could have been a lot longer in many ways, but yeah, that's all.
No, I think Andrew knows this because he's listened to my podcast, but I've got a group of friends I got together in the pandemic. They're my Disney group, and we often have conversations. It's kind of how our podcast ended up coming out, was they just heckle me that I would always have the unpopular opinion. But we've talked about villains before, and my only other villain that I've really liked as much as Christian Bale's character was Killmonger. Because I felt like you knew who Killmonger was, and I just enjoyed I really enjoyed watching Christian Bale, and I feel like that's so hard to say in the Marvel series, because like Ultron, I can't even stand now. It's hard for me to watch him back.
James Spader,
you know,
I love James Spader, but I still agree with that.
Cool. But you know, I do think, like, I totally agree with you, Patrick. Like, there are these moments where I'm like, is this on brand? Like, I mean, but I think that overall, like, his performance for me outweighed those like moments. And at the end of the day, like, what happened. And I thought it was incredibly beautiful. And I, not to like go full spoiler towards the end, but I just loved the fact that that was like the reason why the movie was called Love and Thunder.
Yes.
Because of
maybe
that.
Maybe we should talk about this now.
My wife and I were crying sitting beside
each other. I cried even writing notes of thinking about this. Like,
I'm getting goosebumps remembering it. Yeah.
Yeah. And isn't like, it like so much better that is actually Chris Hemsworth's daughter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
We had a second round of crying when we found that out.
Yep. I'm crying right now.
I think that ending is just like so incredible, because like I said, like, most Marvel movies end with like a giant beam in the sky and a fist fight, and it came down to it, and he basically beat them, and Thor just is like, begs him, like, what if you could do love instead?
Yeah.
And
choose
that
love
decision.
Choose
and
love.
Like, oh, it's sad.
And it's a flip, right? It's a flip, and I didn't realize the flip until I saw it a second time. But that is exactly what Gore was saying to Thor when he was asking for when he was asking for his axe, right? He was saying, like, yes, you can choose to do this. He said, or you can choose love. Choose your love and save her. And he gave him that choice. And in that moment, he chose love. And in that same flip at the very end, he's saying, now it's your turn. You can choose love too. And he's using his own line against him. And you see this moment in Gore where he goes like, oh, shit. Yeah, well, I could do that.
This is something that I wish the movie kind of talked about more, but it's like Thor and Gore actually have so much in common because like you see Thor go and beg the gods for help and they just ignore him. They make fun of him. Like they don't even consider it an option. So like he's let down by all of his like people that he worshipped as well. And then like, you know, he like goes to try and like, you know, save them all anyway. And like because he loves, like he wants to help everybody. And then like, even knowing that like he's gonna like lose Jane because of this decision and everything, like he still chooses it because he wants like the world to be better. And like that is if that's not like what makes you a god, what makes you worthy, like how is this not like, you know, like such a thing? And then like he also like gets his hammer back at the end, like he's worthy again because he made this choice. Like I'm like getting goosebumps talking about how cool was. Like
I don't want to skip past how cool this is, but I'm afraid it may or may not come up again. So I definitely want to, because all my friends that have seen it have asked me this. One separately, all of the Marvel stuff in Phase 4 not touching really bothers me to no end. That is
we should definitely talk about this. I
have pure vengeful hate. I will say though that I don't want to say anything more until after I see tomorrow's episode of Ms. Marvel, and then if even a little bit happens, I'll be okay. But if not, I'm going on a major rant on TikTok.
This is so funny because like I have a really similar opinion, and I think I probably can tell it like with exact same thing in Ms. Marvel, and even shit like why weren't any of the Moon Knight gods in Olympic City or whatever?
There's so many easy touch points that it drives me bonkers. Why? But what I was going to ask is, what do you guys think is going to happen with the gods? Because I feel like you do hear like the God of Thunder, like Thor, but I can't imagine they're going to keep going down a Greek rabbit hole.
I mean, we've got Hercules.
They just introduced
Hercules.
Yeah.
Which was... I don't know about you guys and your reaction in the theater, but
I was a little like, okay,
everyone went wild. I mean, my friend fell off his chair. Or a big Ted Lasso fan.
Did they all start the chant? Did they all start the?
I don't watch Ted Lasso. So
my best friend was Roy Kent Halloween. So he fell off his rocker when that happened.
Yeah.
That's fine.
I liked it because I love Roy Kent. But by that point, like that felt like, nowhere near the satisfaction I got when they explained the name of the title. Like I was still like basking in the glow of how beautiful that the Love and Thunder was. Like you could have shown me Walt Disney reincarnate and I probably would have still been like, oh, that's cool. Because I was still like really excited about the Love and Thunder thing.
No, I'm not discounting and I'm not comparing the two, but you know, because I do think that no matter, you know, if it's a buddy cop movie or a TV series with Thor and his daughter, like that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But how they incorporate all this Greek stuff with all this other stuff, it confuses me. I feel like maybe they shouldn't be going down this rabbit hole. But
I think the fact that they turned on him means that he's going to rely on them less. So he's not going to be looking toward the gods anymore in the same way that he was before. Yeah. So I think This was their opportunity to shine, and I think other than maybe Hercules showing up again later in the story, I don't think we're gonna deal a ton more with the Greek.
Like Hercules, clearly they just set up as like a character that will come back, but like I think it's convenient to have Thor squaring off with other gods because like he's so OP compared to like a lot of the other characters that it's like as soon as he shows up, the fight's over. So like having him set up to be like now like literally having to fight the other gods because they're mad at him for the next couple movies isn't a bad storyline, you know?
Sure.
Yeah, I think that they're going to end up bringing I might be butchering his name. Is it Essos?
God butchering his name?
Butchering his name? Harry Styles' character?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, those are going to probably intertwine where I can see that happening, but I don't know.
Or the Eternals. Yeah. You could honestly bring them in fairly easily with this stuff too. I mean, yeah.
Patrick, tell me how you felt when you saw the Jean-Claude Van Damme split.
Okay. First, okay. I loved it. I thought it was glorious. I immediately knew what it was.
Yes.
And I I could see how that could have gone on a long time. I appreciated every second of it. Mm-hmm. So I honestly, there's a bit of me that wishes that there were some more nods like that thrown in. A lot of the nods in the film come through like music primarily, as opposed to...
And early in the film. I noticed this on the second watching. The silliness was not nearly as much towards the back half of the movie as I thought it was the first pass.
Yeah.
So I kind of would have
appreciated
more of that.
The screaming goats do stop at a certain point.
Oh, I love them.
But then they come back.
I did too. They were so funny.
So
I laughed every single time.
Me too. Every time.
I want to make one note before I miss it, just because I do like it having just seen Ragnarok. You talked about the idea of choosing love, and I wanted to point out in Ragnarok, the theme that comes up over and over has to do with, you know, because that's what heroes do. And it's always running back to the fight. Like every time that Thor says that, it's because he's going back to fight someone. He's going back to jump in the battle. Even if he knows he's going to lose, it doesn't matter. He's still going back to the fight. And in this film, it was
Jane.
You can just not fight.
Yeah.
And I.
No, but Jane did that to save everybody, though.
Yes.
But it took her doing that for him to realize he didn't need to do that. And then his
Everything
you know
changed.
Apex moment there was him saying I'm about to die, why would I spend my last moments fighting with you when I could be with Jane?
And I like that the progression for him came there as opposed to going with the as opposed to doing the typical some part of your powers get sacrificed and then you spend the whole movie like just getting them back. I like that he retained all of that. And then he just built on what came before instead of pressing reset somewhere along the way. And Thor's been stuck in a rut. Thor's been stuck in a rut for several series and films now. It's nice. For any characters to have like lasting progression feels very satisfying, because unfortunately that doesn't seem to be the direction that sequels
even
to go.
Even though you're right, Lauren, he is OP.
Well, it's really
right?
hard with
like
comic
you talked
book
about him being
movies
OP
because you set so often and you're like, yeah.
But that being said, even though I'm not a god, he is probably one of the most relatable characters to me emotionally than any of the other Marvel characters, even the ones that are human, right? And I take a lot of beef with people who talk about this movie being one-dimensional and being just a pure silliness, because it's like that feels offensive to me, because I look at Thor and his dynamic range and his growth and all of these things, and I think like, why would you what more could you want from a character than to go through the kinds of things that he's going through in front of you? It's very relatable to me.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the reasons why I like Star-Lord so much. And I used to love Thor, just how cool he was. But like last two movies, especially this one, made me feel like I can't stand Captain America. And I'm like bracing for impact about it. But he's just so plain and boring, and I cannot relate to him whatsoever. But Thor, especially this last movie, like the teamwork, sometimes like, I mean, we didn't talk about this yet, but like, I love the interactions with all three of them, him, Valkyrie, and Natalie Portman. I mean, there was so much relatability there that I just felt like, wow, you don't think of him as a god many times in this movie. And I think that was really cool.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting because like Thor's actually the characters we've spent the most time with. He's in all the Avengers movies, and this is his fourth like standalone film. And not only that, we've spent an entire TV series with his brother. So like we know so much about like Thor and his family and like all this like emotional growth he's had. We've actually like seen him change like so much throughout the years. Like I think that it definitely felt like at the end of this movie, he has reached like a plateau of understanding that like he has actually grown. He can now like be a dad and like have his own family, and he's not going to mess it up. He's not going to be like Odin, you know, like he knows what to do and like how to treat this kid and like how to be better. Like he's really like figured something out at the end of this to move on from.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I will say, I don't know about you guys, but as much as like, I love the ending, that was probably my favorite part overall, if I had to pick like a singular moment. But I adored every scene with Natalie Portman and Valkyrie. And their,
yes, I want, like, I love them being best friends.
The BFF moments, I just adored.
I love that they never have like a long time of getting to know each other either. Just instantly friends. Like, it's great.
Valkyrie is many times more enjoyable in this film than she is in Ragnarok. I, having just seen it again, I did not like her character in Ragnarok.
She grated on me in Ragnarok.
She's an antagonist in the beginning.
Yeah.
It's not that. It's not that idea. I just don't... I don't know what it is, but the word grated is a very good word to use with how I felt about Valkyrie. And I did not feel that at all in this film.
I was rooting for her every step of the way.
I love her so much. Yeah.
I want them to make a movie or at the very least a TV series just about Valkyrie.
Like, yeah, and her ruling, like being the king of New Asgard.
I would literally watch like a dating show where like Valkyrie finds a girlfriend. I don't care. I want more time with her. Like, I just think she's great.
Deal.
That would be fun. I think one of my favorite lines that I couldn't remember after the first watching, but I actually made note of it this time around is, once you blade, you never fade. I'm going to get a shirt that says that when Natalie Portman asks if she's still rollerblading, she's like, no, he's like, are you? Yeah. Every
that
Saturday.
So
once you blade, you never fade.
Never fade.
That was great.
So I think that's a good jump. Let's talk about the humor of this film. Ragnarok represented a change to the Thor series. It really felt like just a new incarnation of the series. And I would argue that Love and Thunder is the third incarnation of the series, because even though it kind of accentuates or it extends, whether it's the how bright it is or how silly it is or whatever, even though it's more of that, it's still so much more of that it now fully feels like a Taika Waititi vehicle. I mean, I made a comment that I now feel like I can see comparisons to like Our Flag Means Death and series like that.
And Jojo Rabbit, even.
Anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's not going to land for everyone because it is, I guess, more niche in that regard. But how did...
It's just definitely a certain acquired taste, maybe.
Yeah.
I think everyone's going to have opinions on this. So, Andrew, I'll just start with you. How did this film land for you?
It was perfection. It was... I'm giving this movie... And you're not asking for ratings, but I'm giving this movie like a 9.75. Because I think it literally has everything that I would want. I love Taika Waititi. I love his silly, ironic, doesn't take himself too seriously brand of humor. But I also love his way of being able to capture depth. We saw it with Jojo Rabbit. There's silliness in that movie. There's ridiculousness in that movie. But there's also this great, you know, insane heart. Amount of depth and pain and emotional maturity happening in that movie. And we see the same thing in this. And I feel like it is a Taika Waititi. I think you saying it's a vehicle for him is a perfect way of saying it. It's a Thor skin. I gotta be careful saying Thor skin.
Oh gosh, it's a goat drawn chariot for made special for Taika.
Yeah. But it was, I think, near perfection for me. The humor, especially seeing it the second time around, the humor you can appreciate, but you're not laughing quite as much the second time around. It's not catching you off guard as much, and you can really appreciate the depth. Both of those things together, I think near perfect for me.
Heather?
I couldn't agree more with Andrew.
I hope we could say less. I was just ready for you to give it to him.
No, and you know what? Andrew often hate texts me about how he hates my opinions and always sides with my sister. It's true. Just want to note that for real life purposes.
You want me to note that you're agreeing with me. You're looking for some sympathy later is what you're saying.
No, okay. No sympathy. Right. No sympathy. But my dad is a super funny guy because he's just weird and quirky. So sometimes it's really hard for me to find things that people think are baseline funny. I'm like, that's not that funny. Where I think that there are so many moments in this movie that didn't try so hard. They just lent itself to being cute and funny. Like when the kids towards the end end up having to like use toy stuffed animals as a form of lightning to strike. Like, I thought that was the funniest. Like, that was so funny. The goats that I think all were inspired by the Taylor Swift music video. Like,
I think we've all seen that YouTube video. Yeah.
Strokes of genius. I think that my only gripe where I would say that, you know, doesn't receive a 10 out of 10 for me was like, I thought Natalie Portman fits the plot totally, but does she fit a Taika Waititi humor side of a film? That was like, it was tastefully made that she was trying, because I think that in real life, that's exactly how it was. I don't think that it would have been any better than that.
Well, to give you an idea of his connection with her, he's doing that new Star Wars film or several new Star Wars films. And he went to her during the making of this movie and said, hey, how would you like to be in a Star Wars movie? And she said, I've been in Star Wars movies.
Oh my gosh.
I definitely heard this on another podcast. I'm pretty sure it was The Big Picture. I listened to 3 reviews today. But I think they've made this point where it's like Natalie Portman is actually the only person other than Chris Hemsworth who wasn't from the Taika era, basically. She's the only person from Kenneth Branagh for Thor.
Yeah.
And she fits that really, really well. And I think she had fun doing this movie, but is it like her thing? No.
And it's very apparent. Very apparent that way too. But I because like there were one or two jokes that I was like, well, we could have like lived without this one.
I didn't think her like workshopping the like tagline worked at all, because I'm like, I'm never like cognizant that Thor even has one. So the fact that you're trying to like make this a thing is weird.
But then Eat My Hammer was like hilarious. Like,
it worked. Yeah. I think it worked as best as it could. But Patrick, you ask a good question. Should she fit that?
I think there's two pieces of it, though.
Yeah, it's okay.
But I'm asking, was Natalie Portman a fit before now? So you think that she fit very firmly before now?
Yes. Dark
World. She's not like my favorite character or anything, but yeah.
In Dark World,
her tone has been odd this entire time, to be honest. And I love Natalie Portman. It's not unlike Andrew, who actually has a distaste for her.
It's true.
I like Natalie Portman. I'm a very
unpopular opinion for real.
I'm a very big fan of hers, but I've had trouble with her in this entire franchise.
Listen, you know what? This gives me an idea. Yeah. I really wish I want to rank all the significant others of the Marvel universe.
Ooh, that would be so fun.
Just so that you can say Natalie Portman is the last one. Kreider.
I wouldn't put her high up on the list for sure, because it's Kreider, not the best. I did like that little montage we had of them dating. It was kind of fun.
That was cute. That was cute.
I want to say before we get too far away from the like overall opinion thing and like kind of what we were saying with like that tone of like the humor, I think Taika Waititi is so good at balancing happy, sad, where he's talking about something that's incredibly sad, but saying it in a way that's funny, or the people in it aren't acknowledging how sad it is in many ways. And so like Jojo Rabbit is a great example where like that is a movie about the Holocaust, but it's really funny.
Yeah.
Or like, I think Hunt for the Wilder People is one of the best movies ever, but objectively the story is really, really sad. But that kid is so hilarious. It's so funny. Like that funeral scene where he's the priest is like one of the happy, saddest things ever. Cause like the stuff he's saying is so wacky, but he has a point at the end of it.
He embraces it. He embraces it.
You know, I will say also to the point of the humor aspect, only because this happened in the first 50 minutes of Thor Ragnarok. I thought this was so funny. The scene, I love that they played homage and did like the whole play again. Yeah. And then, and then to bring in someone as funny, which I was just doing a project and I had just actually met Ben, Melissa McCarthy's husband.
Yeah.
And like, the fact that they were in it like blew my mind, and it made it like that to me, like those types of humor moments, like they add up.
Yeah.
You know?
They do. Yeah. They do. They're cumulative for sure.
They came back. Oh my God.
They came back, but then they like double down on it. You're like, I'm going to add Melissa McCarthy. Like, yes, I want all of it.
I
love the idea that like these guys survived it from Ragnarok and then like lived to Asgard. And this they're like,
save the actors. Save the actors.
Give me a spinoff show on their theater troupe. I'd watch that.
Do a Station 11, but with them.
Oh my gosh. I would watch the crap out of the show. They could also watch a show of like Ant-Man's friend just summarizing any Marvel movie. That would be great.
They did those Olaf shorts, right, on Disney Plus.
I said that they should just get his
yes,
buddy to do those.
And have him do all the Marvel movies. That would be incredible. They're just 7-minute long little shorts, and it's him doing his. Oh my gosh, that would be an absolute success. So Disney, you are
even
the most
Infinity War. That would be the best.
You have the most potential to get this through, Heather. So we're gonna have to put this on your back to get this to the people at Disney.
I will tell the people when I see them at Comic-Con.
Okay, good, 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 good.
So they have no, they have no, you know, nothing whatsoever into the. You know, that part, but I'll pass it along.
Yeah.
So, so going back to Ragnarok, and I remember that film. I remember it being very funny. We saw it in theaters. It had a lot of similar high moments for me. And going back to rewatch it, let me say that we're going to transition now into a bit more of the compare contrast between what's happened in Love and Thunder and then also Ragnarok. But I remember being so surprised by the humor in the film. And so that level of delight, I think, made the film even funnier. On a rewatch, it is still incredibly firmly a Marvel film and within the Marvel framework. And it only feels... You have these jabs where they seem like they're jabs at the either a self-awareness for the vehicle, or they seem like they're bringing light to the formula a bit. But it's not as wholly cohesive as I remember it being. It instead feels like we're morphing kind of in and out of Love and Thunder. When we go to Love and Thunder, that feels very on theme all the way through, even if you don't like the theme, or even if like some of the the pieces don't sit well with you. Like an example of that for me is that I complain about the quick cutting through the intro because I feel like that Gore lost some of his meaning in that. However, that same style is what made the black and white tiny planet like fucking awesome. And so I recognize that that style continues through the film for better or for worse. And a lot of the humor continues for better or for worse. Whereas I felt like Ragnarok more like phased in and out of it. Now, Lauren, Andrew, y'all haven't seen Ragnarok in a while.
Yeah.
What are your feelings about the film, at least based on how you remember it?
I mean, Ragnarok is like my number two Marvel movie usually. Like I've watched it like a lot, so I love that movie. I rewatch it pretty frequently, so I would agree that it definitely feels like more in the like original Marvel vein. But a lot of the like Phase 4 stuff that they've been doing recently kind of seems to be growing a bit out of the original box that they had kind of adhered to more strictly before now. Because like I don't think we could have gotten like Spider-Man early on, like the one we had now, early on either. Like it just didn't fit like what they were talking about. And like Doctor Strange is also another one where it was like way too out of the kind of expectations that these movies were supposed to hit. And now they're like not afraid to kind of branch out, and maybe that's for better or for worse. But like, I didn't feel like it felt like this movie felt like out of control or like off the rails. Like the thing that kind of felt lacking to me was maybe that like they started a lot of thoughts that they didn't finish. Like I do think more time in the beginning with Gore or some other things could have fleshed out ideas that they kind of brought up, but didn't have time to kind of settle into, I think.
Yeah, so as a compare and contrast to Ragnarok, I think Ragnarok was more of a linear story, traditional story tropes, specifically Marvel story tropes, but just on a different planet, which we had already gotten with Guardians of the Galaxy anyway, right? We had already gotten some of these things with that story, and it was definitely. Everyone, when we saw Ragnarok, we were like, they were only able to do this level of crazy because of what Guardians of the Galaxy introduced into the Marvel world. So like we understood that this is a further extrapolation of that same leniency. But I think one main difference is, and I think you just said it, Lauren, but I don't think this is a negative thing. You talking about there being, they opened up a bunch of boxes and they didn't quite put the lid back on all of those boxes.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing. Just maybe like it used to be kind of they were fitting them into a package and now they're not.
There's three or four things that are going to happen. They're going to get introduced early in the movie, and then don't worry, it's all going to get wrapped up by the time it's over. That is not what we get with Love and Thunder. And I love that about it, because real life doesn't wrap things up like that. Real life opens up boxes and then you get distracted and walk away and you never see what's in that box, or you never get to fully pull everything out or explore it. And to me, that level of chaos is what to me makes it feel more relatable as much as a story like this, which is otherworldly, literally, metaphorically, and all of these things. It's what makes that so grounded for me. If it was all wrapped up nice and neat by the time this thing was over, it would have felt more like Ragnarok, but it didn't, and I liked that. I liked it more because of that.
Can I ask something? Maybe it's Patrick, don't kill me. I because I'm curious.
Patrick,
it's
don't
more,
kill me.
out of all the Phase 4 content so far, where does this Thor rank? And also, where does this Thor rank in general, also to your guys' rankings?
Oh, that's good. Lauren, I feel
I
like
wrote
it's
this
gonna
down
have,
actually as a
I
question.
Knew you would have this, Lauren. Why don't you start?
So I'd say for Phase 4, I'd say that to me, this is number 2, and I'm only putting Spider-Man over it.
Okay.
Love that movie so much. And it's maybe perfect. But then in the overall ranking, I didn't like write it down like a number necessarily, but probably like definitely like the upper half, maybe top 10 or just below that. I think top 10, I think would make it actually, now that I'm thinking of the list, but like, yeah, I definitely like this movie like a lot. Is it my like favoriteest Marvel movie? Was it better even than Ragnarok? In my opinion, maybe not, but like, it's just tough, 'cause it's a lot more to like the more we're even talking about this, the more I'm liking this movie. 'Cause like, I just am having more time to think on it. So I just need to like watch it again.
Yeah.
So I'd say, yeah, like middle top overall, way top of Phase 4.
So
yeah.
I would say in Phase 4, this probably beats out Spider-Man by just inches. So this is probably my number one right now. Spider-Man is like 1.2, right? Like they're really sharing the top spot right now.
Yeah,
that's fire.
And then right immediately after that is Ms. Marvel. That show is phenomenal, and I love what they've done with the expansion, and like, they would never have tried to tell that kind of story in that way 5 years ago. And I love the progression of where Marvel is because of all that stuff. In terms of overall, this beats out Ragnarok to me. To me, this beats out Ragnarok, and I love Ragnarok. Was my top 5. It has shared second, third, and fourth position all, and it bounces around, but this beats it out. So this is in the top 5 of all Marvel movies for me.
Jedi, I want to comment on that as I give mine. Jedi made the comment I wanted to like Strange more, but man, it fell short. I told Andrew.
Oh, I can't even talk about that movie.
No, that's fine. But I told Andrew when I walked out of this film, out of Love and Thunder, it highlighted to me how much worse Doctor Strange was.
100,000%.
That's what this film did for me. Interesting.
I like Doctor Strange.
Nothing can top me seeing Andrew Garfield on screen again. That's just such a high point. Although, as a whole film, this might actually be my favorite of Phase 4, even though it doesn't contain my favorite scene of Phase 4.
Which was what? Now you have to tell me, because I don't know.
Is it the one you just talked about? Like
all three of them
of
landing
portal?
On the.
It would absolutely have Garfield, and it would take place sometime between like being in the chemistry lab and on the tower, like
100%.
100%. I think I would actually like take this ending scene and put that as my like favorite scene of Phase 4 so far. But yeah,
I just want to see him go Peter 3 again. I just
Peter 3.
Yeah, fine with that. In terms of all of the Marvel films, I think this is like the 29th film or something like that. It's some like stupid number. I don't know. I don't hold the old films in much esteem. Like, I don't know that I feel like they hold up to me very well, because they are, the more you see, the increasingly formulaic they feel and are, and because of that, increasingly dated that they feel. So this film is still going to be a top five film for me overall, but that's also because I don't know. I don't have like really deep rooted memories with the older films.
Yeah, see, that's the problem. Like Guardians of the Galaxy 1 and Thor and Ragnarok have like very strong personal memories attached to them, which is why I like them so much. So that's why it's like extra hard to be like, oh, it's better than that I've seen 1,000 times with all my friends many, many, many times.
Yeah.
Like,
what was
about
yours,
for you, Heather?
Yeah.
Hands down, this was number one in phase four. And it makes me nervous being such a big Guardians fan of because I'm probably going to be them
too.
I'm going to be, you know, Lauren, I bet you can probably attest that we're going to be very critical of what happens next. And I've
been waiting so long.
I said literally that, like, if I hear, I can't wait for I probably need to not watch a single trailer, a single piece of press when this movie comes out, because if I hear, it'll be a great conclusion. One more time, I'm going to barf. I'm going to barf my brains out. I'm not looking forward to it. That's how sad I am about Guardians 3, of how they've been talking about it, which I think is maybe why I'm so much more hopeful about this one, because you see him so, you know, happy, even in like with Thor, which was always kind of a pipe dream, seeing Guardians 1. Hands down, this was my top one in phase four. As far as overall, it's definitely top five for me.
We only have a few minutes left. So with our last few minutes, we have to do two things. We have to try to get in high and low, and we have to get in our rankings, or at least our 1 through 10 on this film. I mean, 0 through 100, but we'll say 1 through 10 because Andrew's more comfortable with it. So high and low. So you don't have to do both unless you just have both. But basically, best scene from the film or moment from the film, worst moment. Could be moment, it could be character, it could be song choice, it doesn't matter. But like high and low, again, I feel like Lauren already wrote this down, so I just want to go to Lauren first.
I actually should have.
Wow, I'm surprised you
someone,
didn't.
Someone throw out one of them.
I was a little bit
someone
unorganized.
Throw out one.
Just because we haven't brought this up yet, I think the whole like relationship now that like the kind of what's the word? Like the personalities that they gave to like the Hammers as characters now was so excellent and so funny, and how they treated like Mjolnir like his ex-girlfriend, and like Stormbreaker's totally jealous. Like there's that one scene where like he's trying to like call it at the party and be like sneaky or whatever, and it just shows up next to him.
Yeah. He just so comes funny. Around the corner and is like, oh hey, I was looking for you.
Yeah, like I really liked like all that like added humor with that. And then like that he gets Mjolnir back in the end is also cool with like how that happened. The kind of like buckshot scatter version of the hammer that Natalie Portman has is also super cool, that like where it like, you know, shatters out. And I think it's really thematically beautiful that the like character who is sick and dying with cancer, like takes up a broken thing and it makes her stronger, and it, because it is broken, makes it stronger as well.
Yes. Yeah.
Like it has
makes it,
new
a, it makes it a more
now.
Powerful. It makes don't, both of them more powerful.
Don't you dare make me cry again. But basically, in summation, hammer stuff.
But that's why it's like, it's a funny joke, but it has this deeper meaning. That's the whole thing.
Mine is going to, for my high moment, long shadows. Man, every time those shadows got long, I was like, this is so badass. I loved it so much. Heather.
I know we didn't talk about it. I don't know if it's like a do or a don't. I will say generically love, because I thought that oftentimes it's obviously a hot topic within Pixar crap and Disney stuff, but they really, you know, and I think it is a controversial topic about the LGBTQ community. And how they just, they didn't steer away from it. And some people wanted more, some people didn't like how they were represented. And I just feel like they're just being gripey about it. And I just wholeheartedly appreciated the scene where Valkyrie is talking to, I cannot think of his name, and I'm being such a bad Disney fan. Who's Taika's, the rock guy? Krog?
Oh, Korg.
Korg. Yeah, Korg. 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 Korg.
Yes. how they had this moment and they didn't talk about how each other were in the LGBTQ community. They just talked about love.
Yeah.
And how
Dwayne
generic. What was that?
Dwayne. His
his
rock partner at the end.
Like how you make rock babies. Like I was all into everything of that. And you know, I think that all of that I truly appreciated. I hated the fact that when people talked about it, because when you fight for all that like coverage to like have it and then to be gripey about it, like genuinely makes me upset. Cause I think that was some of the funnier parts of the movie, you know, was that somebody is still looking for love in that community. Somebody has it. And yet they're still watching this couple that's pretty much going down like a sinking ship, but they still want every second together. Yeah. So I don't think, and I don't think I had a low, honestly.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
I'll share one for you. Just kidding. Andrew, cheers.
I think my favorite, I think my favorite was the end where the close-up shot right when they're explaining, right before Korg explains Love and Thunder, when they step into the deal, he hands her Storm. What's Stormbreaker. The axe name? Stormbreaker.
Yeah.
I was thinking Storm Chaser.
I know remember that's the sword, but not
Storm. Yeah, Stormbreaker. Yeah. he hands her Stormbreaker, and she holds it without any issue. Right? She's not like ugh. She's holding it, and then it slow pans over close up of the tassels on the backside of Mjolnir that she put on there, the glitter tassels. And I thought, how precious was that? And he's like going out there with it proud, and then watching it the second time around today, knowing that that's his actual daughter, and that choked me up. Like, how proud of a dad is he in real life in that scene too, right? Like, so many layers happening of beautiful in that. I think the worst part of this movie, the low of this movie, has nothing to do with the movie. It has to do with some toxic people who want things to be the way that they've always been and are frustrated that things are changing, and that pisses me off. And I was gonna read reviews, but we're going to end on a happy note. So that's the worst part of this movie.
You need to bring the negativity in. Yeah, because like I've seen some weird complaints. Like Kreider's bringing up this thing where like people were like saying that like Thor shot down Axel being trans because he changed his name. I was like, no, he was just like saying that's not the name that I thought your name was. But if you want to be called that, I will now call you that the rest of the freaking movie. I'm like, what are you complaining about?
It has nothing to do with him being trans. It has nothing to do with him being trans.
Yeah, I was like, he just missed. He's like, I thought your name was this. He's like, nope, it's this. What is this argument? I think people like,
but I also think it was a little bit more than that, but he was fighting for the fact that his dad gave him a name and to respect the friendship he had with his father, who is now gone. He wanted to be the voice of his father in that situation. But at the end of the day, after a very short argument, he said, okay, you're Axel. Like, it wasn't like this. He wasn't defiant. He wasn't pressing against it. It definitely had nothing to do with him being trans. Like, people have gone into this movie with a bad...
even if he is, that's not what that had, in my opinion, at all, what that was talking about.
That's what I'm saying. That had nothing to do with that. Nothing to do with
it. But I think that's in the vein of what you're saying, where it's like, why are you, like, complaining that it, like, wasn't enough of these, like, things that are new? You know, I don't know. It's just frustrating to me because... Yeah. Like you were saying before, Heather, like we're already like fighting to talk, like even get like gay people holding hands in one of these movies. The fact that they're like, oh, but they didn't talk about that this kid was trans. Why? I'm like, that's a lot of things to ask.
I know. Like but there's so much going on realistic. In this country that like just the fact that they had so much of it. But also, can I just say that we didn't even talk about Chris Hemsworth's butt? Like,
oh, that was second on my list.
No, listen, my wife was with me. I don't need her expecting that from me. So.
Don't worry, she won't. She won't.
That was his real butt. That was not a butt double.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was.
Oh, that's incredible.
He was very proud about it.
No CG.
It was no CG. He was very proud and said that he worked very hard for that moment.
Yeah.
That
makes me laugh.
I worked very hard for that moment, too.
Stop it.
In the like WandaVision behind the scenes things, they showed that like, Paul Bettany had a padded butt, and I'm like, are you kidding me?
So it was exactly as perfect as you would imagine. Number two, my low point for the film that I just have to get in before we end this was It's-a-me, Zeus. I hated his voice, his accent, whatever that was, so much. I didn't mind that he had the mannerisms he did. That did not bother me. But his accent was awful.
Second pass, I bet you like it more, because I was in the same boat. And the second time around, I was like, okay, knowing what ends up happening with his character, it's a play up, right? It's a lot like what Taika did with Hitler in Jojo Rabbit. It's a caricature of this supposedly powerful being, right? This powerful person that a bunch of people looked up to. And it was a play act on that. And I think it was very deliberate. And the second go around, I liked it so much more.
It didn't help me that he also kind of looks like Ron Jeremy. And I was just imagining that the whole time.
Could you imagine?
I heard that they did film a version where he did it without that accent and had like the more like the accent that Anthony Hopkins uses for Odin. Sorry.
More serious. So,
like, and they, I guess like normal Zeus voice, but they decided to go this way. Mixed feelings about it. I think I maybe need to watch it again.
Watch it again.
It didn't bother me like so much, but I was like, is that really what a Greek accent sounds like? Sounds like Mario.
And that's the point, right? That's what's Taika Waititi about this. If you listen to him do the, he was preparing for Blackbeard, and they, as soon as he looked up where Blackbeard was from, he's like, oh, I can't do that accent. I'll just be me.
Doc Reed said, I didn't need that mental image, but now you're stuck with Zeus as the hedgehog.
He does like throw orgies and stuff. Not that.
That's true. The very last thing is for anybody that thinks the story was too silly, just imagine that the part that you think is too silly is actually being relayed by Korg. And because he's the reader, he's embellishing it with his own personality, which is fairly silly.
He's
and
the
that
narrator.
Might be a way that you can be okay with it, because we're getting it from his point of view.
Thank you. Also, it's a comic book movie.
It's comics. This is fun stuff, everybody. Chill out.
Jeez, okay. Louise. All right.
All right. We're at the end. Anything. This is the last chance.
1 through 10. You didn't say you're 1 through 10. I said 9.75, and I'm staying on it.
I'm going to say 9 for now, because I was thinking, like, I have this in my notes, and like the issue I had like watching it, and I do think rewatching it might like sway this quite a bit, but I did feel like there were some like things you can feel that this movie was edited down at some point. I feel like there's just stuff I wanted more of, or like needed a little longer.
And
like
a director's cut.
Yeah. And I did hear that there was originally like a 4.5-hour cut of this movie. I would gladly watch that, but I realized that that's unrealistic. So unless you're Stranger Things. So, you know, like I just do feel like there were things that they started to talk about, the conversations that their questions that they brought up, that they didn't really have enough like time to go as deep on as I would have like enjoyed, but that's okay. I think what we got is good and like much shorter, much more digestible for like the normal people in the world. And so like really like this movie. I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10 for now, but I'm like asking after I've seen it a second time, change my rating. Okay.
So 9 out of 10, Andrew, you said you're 9.75. Oh my gosh, that's incredible.
I know, it's almost crazy. Perfect.
No, it's crazy. Heather, where are you at?
9.5,
which is a more reasonable number, by the way.
Andrew, I would have gone with you, but Patrick. I just think that there are a lot of degrees that in that 0.5, there's just so many different degrees. And in my head, I was trying to categorize them, and I was like, I got to put it at 0.5.
So that's fine. That's fine by me.
We have Kreider with a 9, Jedi with an 8 or an 8.5. I just think it's I don't deal on the 0.5. This is the reason I proposed the 0 to 100 scale that got laughed out of here. No. But we're doing a 1 through 10 scale, so
It would be
95 out of 100. Grade, so
I know that, and that makes sense. That's easy for me, but I only deal in whole integers, so it's a 9 for me. I it would be tough for me to give anything a 10. I am excited to rewatch it though, and I'll feel differently because I know what to expect, and I don't know if that's going to be good differently or bad differently, but I am planning to see it again. So I will say, having seen Ragnarok, it actually boosted my opinion of this film as opposed to diminishing it, which is what I was kind of going into Ragnarok expecting. So
even just like having this conversation and like kind of thinking about this movie like a lot more, like I like it more than when I walked out of the theater, to be honest. Like the more that I kept thinking about it, I'm like, those little nitpicks that I had like while I was watching it just melted out of my brain, and I was like remembering like way more good stuff, seeing like thinking about it more and like seeing all these connections that were like thematically there the whole time. It's just like, you know, just didn't think about it like I didn't go deep enough initially. Yeah.
I gave it an 8.5 when I first walked out of the theater the first time. So it increased that much on the second watch for me.
I have to edit my no, or my down, is that Chris Pratt looked a little homely in...
He did look scraggly, didn't he?
That I have to, because I remember thinking...
I love that, but I love, like, a scruffy boy. Like,
listen, I like him, but it was a little... it was not Star-Lord. It was not.
I was also noticing, because I've done the Guardians costumes, smaller. They're all wearing different outfits. Like, none of them are wearing their old
outfits. Did, yeah, he had lost probably 20 pounds.
I know we're
pounds,
wrapping up, but I just had...
Yeah.
Yeah, his neck was kind of smaller, his shoulders were kind of smaller. It genuinely looked like it was, like, oh, yeah, I can swing by on a Thursday and record that part. Like, that's how it felt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
The fact that, like, Nebula had, like, a leather jacket, I'm like, that means she doesn't have to wear that stupid arm. I bet Karen Gillan loves that.
So with that, we're going to wrap this conversation. Heather, tell people where they can find you, find your stuff, listen to your podcast or whatever else you do. Just, this is your opportunity. Say stuff.
Yes. I love my podcast. It's with my sister, Lindsay. We host a podcast that is comes in seasons. Andrew's been on it. He's going to be on it next season. We just wrapped season two. It's called Unpopular Disney Opinions. Send the hater DMs. My Disney account is Disney Pink Adventures. And I do have my own company, which is called Pink Deer LLC. And we do social media consulting. So I'm a huge Disney fan. And in a few weeks, we'll be going to Disneyland Paris. So we're super, super excited. Both Lindsay and I are going. So we're going to be sipping either the Haterade or praising the cheers of Disneyland Paris. So we'll have a lot to talk about. And Andrew gets to pick his topic next season, which we should be launching next season in November. So
yeah,
I can guarantee you whatever he wants to talk about, it'll be unpopular.
I have a weird question. Are you worried you won't like Disneyland Paris?
Yes.
You should be.
I am terrified. I also think that Disney... the separate podcast, but like, you know, I think Disney, there's just so much about like the people, aura, the being there, the ambiance. And my sister just who has been to Paris, I've never been to Paris, she's like, the people fucking hate us, so just get used to it. And I'm like, but even at Disneyland, like, there's no way. I'm a little nervous.
It is, Disneyland Paris is widely understood in the Disney world as the least popular of all of the Disneys. So that's a pretty popular opinion. So we'll see.
So I'm looking
how
forward to drinking all day or something like that.
Yeah.
We'll
I mean, worst case scenario, you're still in Paris.
That's
well, you're not, because it's in Chessy, which is like an hour and a half outside of
it's
Paris.
It's actually not in Paris. Oh. Yeah. Well, that's just a marketing point.
Have a nice time in France.
But thank you guys so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for sharing your stories.
This is awesome.
I have plenty of them, and I'm happy to come back to share more. So
yeah, after Comic-Con for sure, because you're going to know all the secrets.
I'm sure I'll have plenty. I will be at Comic-Con. So if anybody's going, I will be going with IDW Publishing. They do amazing comics and comic book work, including if you guys are big comic book fans, TMNT, The Last Ronin. So,
yes, IDW, IDW stuff.
Money at their booth every time I go.
You'll see me. Well, you would see me there, but yes. So,
all right, and that's it for our episode. Thank you to everyone for participating. These conversations are always better with more people. If you liked this show and you want to see others like it, just go to mofone.network. You can find all of our episode shows, show notes, links to archives. It's all there. Social links, whatever. I could tell them all to you individually, but I don't feel like it. So mof1.network, go there. Watch us when we record on twitch.tv/mof1podcast, and then at mof1podcast everywhere else. Certainly subscribe, rate, review, do all those things, and then just join in the conversation. Conversations, again, are better with more people. But with that, we're going to go ahead and get out of here. We'll see you at the next After the Film. Bye!